Welcome back to Unyielded, Thriving No Matter What. I'm your host, Bobby Kaler, and I'm so happy that you've joined us. As the creator and host of this podcast, it is critical to me to convey to you, our listeners, how much positive power you have inside of you right now, in this very moment. You have the power to change your life. And that could be changing it, like I had to back when I was 23, from a place of kind of being on a road to nowhere, kind of feeling hopeless and stuck, to being on a road to somewhere desirable, someplace good. It could also be changing your life from good to great. And it could also be changing your life from great to, I cannot believe how incredibly blessed and lucky I am to get to live this life. You have that power inside of you, and that is all you need to get started. The rest, you can learn along the way. I started this podcast as a way to bring stories of hope and triumph, as well as resources that will help you along that journey, whatever that might be, whatever your starting place is, or whatever your destination might be. My sincerest hope is that you find it valuable. So let's go. Here is this week's episode. My guest today is the author of the newly released book, Unreceptive, which is about how we create influence with those around us. He is the CEO and co-founder of Aslan Training, a global sales enablement company appearing 9 consecutive years in the Selling Power Top 20. Since 1996, Aslan has worked with many Fortune 500 companies, training more than 100,000 sellers and leaders around the globe. His primary role is to create content that helps people live, sell, and serve more effectively. His name is Tom Stanfill, and I cannot wait for you to meet him. Tom, thank you so much for joining me here on the Unyielded podcast.
Oh man, I have been so excited. I was actually a little hurt that you hadn't invited me. I was seeing all these people on the podcast, and I'm like, Bobby, I can't believe we've been working together and you haven't invited me. No, I'm kidding. No, I'm just such a fan of yours and a fan of your podcast. So anything that I can be a part of that has your name on it, I am always love the opportunity. So thanks for having me.
That's so sweet. And hey, you're busy, man. You've been writing a book. You're running a company. I'm like, Tom's a busy guy. I don't want to bother him.
Yeah, I'm busy. No, I'm not too busy for this. So I am busy. Mainly because I have 24 people in my family. That's why I'm busy.
God, your family, I think it keeps growing. Every time we talk, it's bigger.
I know. I did a podcast recently and they're like, okay, what's this one thing we don't know about you? I go, I have 24 people in my family. I have 14 grandchildren.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So I have four married children. Yeah. Four married children. They all have a lot of kids. So, so we have 14 grandchildren from almost 15. Our oldest grandchild's about to turn 15. Can you believe that?
No.
And then the youngest is like a year and a half. So anyway, we're having a blast. So that keeps me busy.
I would guess. I bet you it keeps Claire pretty busy too.
Yeah, it keeps Claire, my lovely wife. Yeah, the most important part of this partnership. Yeah, as a matter of fact, I just got an invite about, we're keeping kids on whatever. And I'm like, I'm out of town that week. So, no. And she tries to take every single grandkid out for their birthday.
Oh.
So for individual time. So I really try to make that. But yeah, so it's a busy season, but very full.
Yeah, you guys have such a wonderful family. I love that.
Well, thank you. We are close. That is one of the greatest blessings. So
it's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. It is interesting. We really all get along. People are kind of fascinated by that. Like, well, are your kids there for Thanksgiving? And I'm like, no, they love being together. I mean, they all are very close. Even the outlaws, you know, we all think of them as our children and, you know, they all love each other and it's just kind of a cool thing.
Yeah.
It's not my greatest blessing.
That really is, Tom. You know, not everybody has that. So that's amazing. Yeah, what's the secret?
I wrote this book, Bobby.
I think there is some secrets in there.
Yeah. What's the secret? God, that's a long conversation. But, you know, ultimately, I think it all, and it's an overused word, but it's love. I mean, you know, you love people unconditionally. regardless of who they are. And I mean, I have a lot of weird quirks, but you just love each other unconditionally and people want to be around you.
Yeah. It's amazing how that works.
Yeah. It's like, you know, there's no requirement for our relationship. You don't have to believe what I believe or think how I think or be who I want you to be. I just love you. And that's worked well with our children.
Yeah. Yeah. That's powerful. Yeah. So now I'm already thinking about more questions I want to ask. But before I do that, would you tell the listeners a little bit about who you are and what you do? We know that you have a ton of grandkids.
Yeah, I'm half Tom on the show because we're focused on grandparents. Yeah, that's probably not why you had me on the show. I am CEO and co-founder of a company called Aslan Training, and we provide sales training and leadership development for some of the biggest companies and really in the world. We focus on pretty large organizations and been doing this for about 27 years. And you're one of our top facilitators. If anybody checks out Bobby, that's one of the many things that she does and talents. So I was loved the idea of being on your show. So that's what I do. And kind of my main focus in the company is creating content. You know, I love creating content and I love talking about our content. I love being an evangelist for the company. So that's my primary role.
Yeah. And tell us a little bit about the name Aslan, because I think Aslan. That frames up a lot of stuff here.
Well, given the fact that we provide a little background on our children, I was reading the book, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, that C.S. Lewis book, to my children when we were starting Aslan. And so we were kind of in the middle of sort of forming this, you know, we've been developing training in our own side, our own company that I'd started prior to Aslan. Tab, the co-founder, was working with me, and we decided to leave that company and start a training company. Long story there. But as we were doing that, I was reading that book to my children, and I just loved this character, Aslan, which obviously kind of represents the Christian story and the ultimate sacrifice and the ultimate representation of love, of giving your life for somebody else. And there was a line in the book that said, Aslan's on the move. And I just kind of like, it was changing the culture and was changing how people were, you know, interacting. And I'm like, okay, this is a great name. And I didn't want to name it Stanfill and Norris or Norris and Stanfill. And, you know, this is boring.
It's catchy.
It's catchy. You know, I don't know. You know, so we just went with the name Aslan. And I love the fact that people ask it, you know, like, what's this name Aslan come from? And so it gives us an opportunity to say, we believe that you're more successful in life and in sales when you're serving, right? You're more fulfilled. You're more successful when you serve. And Aslan is all, it's perfect representation of what it's like to serve at the highest level. So that's kind of my answer to the question. They want to know more. We go deeper.
Yeah. And I love that.
Yeah. So that's the name in the company. And I love the fact that people are all over the world. I mean, we've been trained in like 35 countries.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, say the name Aslan.
Yeah.
Although they usually mispronounce it. Which is definitely not a marketing. It's not like a savvy marketing move that people can't pronounce the name of your company. But even people in Aslan have a hard time saying Aslan.
They come up with some creative ways, though. It always amuses me.
Yeah.
But I love it when I get to share that story, because I think that's when people kind of lean in and they think, oh, this is going to be different. This isn't traditionally what we've been taught about sales.
Yeah. You know? And I think what people will tell us, too, which I love. One of the reasons that we love working with you is that people go, this isn't just something you say. This is about who you are. Mm-hmm. Because one of the key things that we teach is motive is ultimately transparent.
Yeah.
You know, and so who you are comes across. Your filter will break down. Your motive will be revealed. And there's just something, there's some sort of, I don't know, magic that happens when people can tell that you really do care about them.
Yeah.
And that you really honestly want to know who they are and what they care about and what's important to them. And they can feel that. And so when our people, everybody that represents us, and I believe all like walks this walk of like, this is really who we are. This isn't just a script or a technique. And it has an impact.
It does.
Yeah.
It really does. You know, and I think back to, it was 2008 when you guys flew me down for lunch. And it was
I remember having lunch with you.
Yeah. I remember it was you and Tab and Doug was there and Faraz scared me to death.
We should have all been scared of you.
Yeah, no, but what I loved about it, because I was like, I don't want to do sales training, you know, but you all seem nice. So I thought, okay, I'll give it a shot.
Whatever.
Yeah. But what I loved about it is you said that sales is simply the greatest expression of serving.
Yeah. The highest level, highest form of serving.
That's right. And that it wasn't just about, these are not just skills that apply in sales.
Right.
Right. They apply throughout our lives. So yeah. I thought, you know, I know that you just, could you speak to that a little bit more before I go on to the book, that, that they apply across our lives?
Well, it really speaks to why I wanted to start a sales training company is because, you know, we always have the saying at Adlon, what works in life works here. And that really what we care more about is our relationships, right? You're never happier than your relationships. Your relationships are good, you're good. Your relationships are bad, you're bad. I don't care how much money you make, how much money you have or don't have. We really operate. And you know this when one of your key relationships falls apart.
Yeah.
Nothing else matters. Well, so what makes relationships work? Kind of like relationships begin and end and are maintained by how we communicate.
Yeah.
You know, it's like how we speak to each other, how we don't communicate our motive, how we work through our problems, how we reveal our feeling, how we ask for things, how we understand and validate each other's point of views, and how we make them feel loved is the words that we use and how we talk. And so that became my passion because as I watched people communicate, I'm like, they don't get this. When I watch parents talk to children or teenagers, I'm like, this is not working. And when I watch people have political conversations, I'm like, this is not working. When I watch people talk about vaccine or not vaccine, this is not working. And so it became a thing like we need, this is basic stuff that if people learned really how to communicate, it would make our lives more fulfilled. So that was really the passion behind Adlon. So we could leverage this platform of, hey, we're going to help your salespeople be more successful and hit their number. But what's more important is we're going to teach them how to be better parents, better spouses, better friends, better, you name it. And that was kind of, that's kind of the heartbeat of Adlon. That's the why behind Adlon exists. And so anything you look at how we teach, you can apply it, except maybe some of the real core sales strategy stuff like assessing an opportunity. But almost anything we teach, you can apply it to your life. And
so that,
and that's what really matters.
Yeah. Cause that's what's
most
important.
And by the way, if we apply it at home, it'll work. You will do it at work.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah. So the book is, tell us about the book a little bit, and then we'll talk about some of the big concepts.
Okay. So it took me not as long as it took you to write your book. I'm sure that you're smarter than me, but it took, we've talked about it the other day, 2000 and I think it was 10 that I started, started the process of writing this book. And part of it is I didn't want to get it wrong.
Yeah.
I've never written a book. I was so passionate about protecting the truths that these aren't my truths. I mean, these are just truths. I mean, there's no new truth. It's like, so I was so passionate about making sure that I did a good job of stewarding this message that I feel like has been given to me to communicate. Again, it's not my truth, that I wanted to get it right. So I started in 2010 and we finally have the book out after 3 rewrites, came out last Tuesday.
So exciting.
Unreceptive. And I'm very proud of just doing the work, I finished it and it was hard.
It is hard.
Yeah. So I know you know that, but so I am proud of getting it done and I dedicated it to my parents, which I saw them this weekend, which is really
nice.
Cool because I just had some amazing parents. And so that's, and it's about really this whole other population of prospects and customers and people that we're not reaching. Because as I say, sort of the core message of the book is the traditional approach to selling and influence doesn't work when someone's emotionally unreceptive. It actually backfires. And so it's all about how do we work with this large, large group of people who don't want to meet with you or don't want to listen to you and aren't open to either your solution or your message or your recommendation or aren't open to meeting. Because everything we've been taught in sales works for the people that want to meet with us or are open to our pet message, but it doesn't work for people who are emotionally closed. So that's the point of the book. So it's a whole nother dimension to selling and influence that I think really, I don't know if it's been taught, honestly. I haven't seen it.
No. And people always say like, oh, I've never heard this before. Even people who have been in sales.
Okay.
And we've also, it applies in leadership, it applies in life. So what makes someone unreceptive?
I decided not to write about that. Okay.
Really?
So because I feel like it's so intuitive, I'm going to answer your question, what I think is, but I think it's so intuitive that we know that people are unreceptive and there's so many reasons why. That I almost, because I've had people ask me that. I'm like, I just feel like I don't want to spend a ton of time. It's like, it just is. But I think I think the main answer to the question though, and I did speak to a little bit of this, is we are just overwhelmed with information. I think there's two eyes. We're isolated. So we only listen to people who agree with us, right? We're in kind of our little tribes And we just keep getting that sort of same message, yep, rinse and repeat. And then we're so overwhelmed with information that it makes us close to looking at anything different than what we already believe. Mm-hmm. Or we feel like we can get the information on our own.
That's right.
Right? I can go get what I want and I can control it. But the problem is, even the information that's fed to us is fed to us based on what we've already searched, which goes back to this isolation idea. And I think that's why people are unreceptive. So it's like there's all these sort of biases. I heard something the other day that said we get like, I don't know, like 2 million bytes of information a day. And so because of, and I think it was actually more, but I don't remember the number. But because of that, we have all these biases because we can't process the information. So you just get these quick biases and you go, oh, I know what you mean. Oh, you're that, you're from the South. You, this is my bias about you. I've even said things because of who I am and what I look like. I've said things that would, where my position would be the opposite of what they think it would be, but my audience has already prejudged me and couldn't even hear that. Oh, you're from the South and you look like this, therefore you mean this. And I'm like, I don't mean that. I couldn't even get them off of the perception or bias they had about me. I one time called a lady out for breaking in line, and all these people in line judged me and said, oh, you're this person. I'm like, first of all, I'm not that person. And B, why are you calling me out? I'm helping all of us. We're in line. We waited in line. This person's waiting. Oh, you're, I'm like, what is going on? It's because we have all these biases.
That's right.
And we're not talking to people and having productive conversations that help people see different viewpoints.
Yeah.
Long answer, but that's,
no, but it's,
I think,
true.
That's really, we don't talk to anybody that goes, okay, look, okay, you believe something completely different than I do. Great. Tell me about that.
Yeah.
And I'll be, when I'm with my little friends and my little tribe and they'll say something, I'll go, how many people have you talked to that have the opposite perspective? How many people have you talked to that believe the exact opposite of you? Sat down, had lunch with them and not said anything, just ask questions. And they'll say never.
Wow.
They don't, because they're in the little tribe, you know? So
that's just, right.
We're all getting more, oh, you believe that, I'm against you.
Yeah.
And so it feeds into this instinct that we have of when somebody disagrees with us, we want to position ourselves as to why they're wrong, mm-hmm, and that backfires.
Yeah. Well, we get that dopamine hit by being right, by thinking that we're right.
A really good point.
So it feels good.
I love dopamine.
It may sound stupid, but I love it.
Well, and you get mad, the dopamine hit. That's a really good point.
Yeah. You know, one of the best experiences I had, it was in high school, and this relates to one of the key principles, is when I took debate, you know, and I was one of those people, I could debate anybody, anytime, anywhere on any topic, like, woohoo, I'm ready to go. And one day in debate, Mr. Jordan, our teacher, said, who believes in X? And it was something, I don't know, controversial. Yeah. And I raised my hand because I was ready to go. And he said, okay, who has the opposite view? And it's my friend Trey. And we both stand up, we're ready to go. And he's like, oh no, you have to debate from the other person's point of view.
Beautiful.
It was the best experience ever.
That's
ever,
beautiful.
You know?
That's so beautiful.
It was awesome. What do you like about that?
Yeah. Oh, what do I like about that? Because if you can't articulate the other person's point of view, that's where the empathy comes from. It's like, I get it. I get why you feel. It's funny. I had to do the same thing. I had to debate like why you could wear long hair. Or something. No, I wanted to have my hair long. This is in seventh grade. Mm-hmm. I wanted to wear my hair long. And the school rule was you had to cut your hair above your ears. That was their rule. And this is a time where everybody's wearing long hair. I mean, this is 1972, maybe 72, 73. And my teacher made me debate the opposite, which made me come up with a different point of view, which made me think, okay, I can kind of see. I had to position it. But anyway, I do love that idea.
Yeah, I think it's a great exercise. And we don't, mm-hmm, Trey and I, we stayed after school and we're like, help me understand. Like, why do you, and you know what? It took our friendship from good friends to best friends.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it really did. Yeah. You know,
well, and you know, there's a thing, and this is part of the principle, one of the principles we teach in the book is that until you can validate the other person's point of view as well or better than they can, they're never going to see your point of view.
No.
But what's so cool about that is you're basically respecting the person enough to say there is a reason, a valid reason for you to have a completely polarized point of view. I respect you as a human being. Yeah. You're not an idiot. And there's a reason. And the only reason we have a polarized point of view, maybe not the only reason, but there's something about your world, your point of view that I don't understand, which means I don't understand. So I'm going to take the trip from my position to your position, and I'm going to see the world the way you do. And when I have that oh moment, like, oh, that's why you, like, I had this one today. This was a couple of years ago. This has shocked me, but this guy had a problem with homeless people.
Really?
And it didn't seem consistent with who this person was. I'm like, this is a person who loves people and gives to charity. And I'm like, he's like, oh, these homeless people really bother me. And I was like, I was ready to debate. Yeah. Like, I was ready to go to war. It's like, how the, and I actually volunteered at a homeless shelter. So this really hit home to me. And I decided to take the trip. And I say, so what is it about homeless people? Like, okay, there's a reason he believes this. This is not a bad person. This is a person that sees the world different. And I have something I don't understand, which means there's something about me that needs to change. So I take the trip and he goes, well, my father, every time we would go on a trip, every time we would do something, he would invite homeless people to go with us. And every time we went to a restaurant, he would leave our family and go talk to homeless people. And he never spent time with me. Oh. He said he knew the homeless people in our community better than he knew me. So it had nothing to do with homeless people. It was how he felt betrayed by his father. They yeah. could have been people with red hair.
That's right.
And so I had this, oh, moment. Oh, that's why you said that. Oh. And so there's this connection that occurs as I'm empathetic to this relationship rift between his father, instead of me correcting him from my moral high ground about how he needs to like homeless people. And then I can say to him, well, by the way, do you know how that kind of came across?
That's right.
And he could go, yeah, you're right. I didn't mean that.
Yeah.
And so now I have influence, but it starts by, so I love that whole idea of seeing the world from somebody else's point of view, which is so sad. It's said so many different ways, but it's so counterintuitive.
Just because it's common sense, we know it doesn't mean common practice.
No.
You know, you said something really important there, Tom, when you said you decided to take the trip.
I love that. Yeah.
It's a choice, right?
It really is the first thing we have to know. Right. I need to That's know right. that I need to take the trip with my wife. Right. Like I need to know that I got to, but it's, then it is a decision because I have to really decide. Otherwise, my gravitational pull to self is so strong. I am going to do what comes natural.
That's right. That's yeah. absolutely right.
But it's easy for me to decide that if I really do know that the best way to love my wife and to influence my children or my friends or my customers is to validate their point of view first. Because I think what we don't know is we don't know that validating their point of view has more impact on my ability to influence than what I have to say. I think if we know that, then it becomes easier to validate. Because we think we're selling more when we're talking.
Right.
And we're really not. We're selling more when we're seeking and asking. And there becomes a time. And here's the sad part. The people that are really good at seeking and asking stop. Because, yeah, they'll stop. And then they'll say, okay, now that I understand, and they don't do anything with it. Mm-hmm. And so that's where they need to, I feel like I'm always talking to two people. There's the people that are great at being other-centered when from the standpoint of understanding and empathizing, but then they don't lead. They don't
right.
lead the customer to a different point of view. Then there's the people that are not very good at seeking and understanding, but are very good at leading.
That's right.
And so it's really being other-centered is about both understanding, but also leading the customer to consider a different point of view.
Yeah, that's important because we have to do more than just the seek.
Yeah, we have to be more than just acknowledging and validating. We have to actually say, okay, that's a really good point. But my role as a salesperson or as someone who wants to influence is to help you see the truth or a better way, which means I do need to lead you.
Yeah.
It means yeah. because, and by the way, if I can't lead them to a better point of view or better, then fine.
That's okay.
That's fine. Then you can't. You go, oh, you don't need what I don't have a recommendation for you. I can't serve you. I can't help you. Oh, but I can, but my fear keeps me from leading. That's self-centered.
Right. Because it's focused on us.
It's focused on us. Right.
Yeah. I had a thought there years ago, Tom, like in early 2000, 2001, something like that. We had our business in Portland and there was someone I was meeting with and he knew me through yeah. networking and he wanted to become a client of mine. And somehow it happened. I have no idea how, because yeah. I was so bad.
Probably
I was
because you're amazing.
No, because no, during the sales process, I'm like, oh, I don't want to be pushy, but that's, right. that's all focused on me. And he gave me some of the best feedback. He's like, unless you can learn how to tell people how to work with you, you're going to fail. I'm like, oh yeah, you're right. So there's another concept I know that's closely related to influence and receptivity, mm-hmm. and it's the tug of war, drop the rope.
Yeah.
Can you speak? Because I think that's one of the most important principles.
I love this idea because it's so easy. It's so easy. It's still counterintuitive, but it is just so easy to do. That what, you know, what obviously you're referring to is this idea of the tug of war principle. Tug of war is that because of our role and because of our title, which means we're trying to sell something and get compensated somehow by people embracing our recommendation, there's this sense that you're going to pull me to your recommendation, even if I don't need it. And so because they sense that, they're going to pull back. So there's always tension involved when you're talking to someone. Even if they're receptive, they can lose receptivity because they feel like, oh, you're going to try to pressure me or pull me to your position. And people want to be in control. People want autonomy. I saw a sign the other day that said, don't throw rocks at this sign. It had 50 holes in it from people just pelting it. I mean, like, I'm going to throw, don't tell me I can't throw rocks at this
sign. I'm going to throw a rock if I want to.
Yeah, you tell me to sit, I'm going to stand. I mean, it's just, you know, my wife, when we first got married, she said, put your seatbelt on. I'm like, well, now I'm not going to, but you're telling me. You know, it's just sort of this instinct of, I mean, I guess it's survival. So there's this tug of war that happened. And so really, there is no tug of war. We have no control over any other people. Control is an illusion. I have no control over who my daughter dated or what she does when she's on a date or what she drinks or any of my children. I have no control. All I can do is influence. I do have the ability. My focus with when I'm talking to anybody is my goal is not to force them to do anything. It's to hopefully get them to hear the truth. Just hear it. If I can get people to listen to the truth and consider it, I've done my job. And so what I like to do is drop the rope and say, you know, there are multiple options. Some of them mean you work with me. Some of them don't. And all options are on the table. Not work with me, work with somebody else, buy a little bit, buy a lot, buy nothing. And my goal is to always put all options on the table. And I've even to the point where I've let customers dictate price.
Wow.
Like literally dictate price. Like you tell me what you think is fair. And what I've noticed or what I've learned in doing this for 25 years is when I drop the rope and say things like, hey, if this isn't a fit, we don't have to meet, or asking permission at a certain time to see if we want to move forward, the opposite happened. They move more towards me than less towards me. Yeah. So I love this concept of dropping the rope, I think, is super powerful. Again, it's hard to do, especially with the people we love. And Here's another example of the people that are really good at dropping the rope, throw the rope and leave. You know, the goal is to drop the rope, but stay.
Yeah. Not run away.
No, run away. Not use it as an escape. Okay. They told me you don't need a buy. You may not need to see it. No, it's like, hey, we want to put all the options on the table. And Marge's goal today is to explore all these options and see which one is right for you. You might need to pay more. You need to pay a little. I mean, we just had a contract with a company that was like, they said, we have a budget of 200,000. And they said, but we won't, you know, I said, well, I'm going to propose what I think is right for you. And I'm just going to look at what I think is what you need, not what it costs. And then we'll get together and you ultimately can decide what you want. If you think you want to pay less, we'll do it for less. But I'm going to propose what you need. Came in at 300,000. And I said, we'll do it for 200.
Wow.
But if I believe that I'm proposing what I think, because you said you need this, you said this. But if you want to do it for 200, we'll take the 85 and we'll cut it down and we'll do it for this. Now, I also didn't lower my cost per day and cost for LP elements. I just said, we'll just look. They came back, no, we need the more. And so they figured it out. I did no pressure.
Yeah. It's a powerful thing.
It's super powerful, especially with your children.
I was going to say, do you have any examples of that?
Lots of examples. Yeah. You know, it goes back. I mean, they get to be teenagers. I tried to shift my role from this authoritarian person who says, you know, you got to be here, do these things, and to being more of a coach and counselor. And because when they're 15, they're leaving my house in 3 years.
Yeah.
And so I switched roles and I started saying things like, you know, I can't control, again, I'm going to protect my kids if I feel like they're in danger, but I'm like, you can date who you want. I can't control who you see. Said, I want you to be happy. And so what you do and who you date is all about you, and you can date who you want, but I'd love to have a conversation about who you're dating and who they're like, because I don't want you to get hurt. But you can date who you want. And so then it became, it moved from don't tell me who to date to who do you think I should date? I mean, ultimately, influence is about an invitation. Unless someone says, I want to know what you think. And until that question is asked, what do you think about fill in the blank? You do not have the opportunity to persuade and influence. And so when you drop the rope, it's much more easier to get the invitation because you're not saying that nobody's pushing you. They're saying, I'm knocking at the door. Can I come in? Do you want to talk about who you want to date versus I'm banging down the door? And if you try to bang down the door, they're going to lock the door.
That's right.
It's like a dresser in front of it. Yeah, I was Best Buy's. And the guy came up to me and I was there to buy a television and I don't know anything about television. And I'm looking at all these televisions and I can't make any sense out of Samsung versus Vizio versus, I mean, LG. I don't know. Guy walks up to me and says, can I help you? And I said, no. I'm just, what I say? Everybody knows.
I'm just looking.
I'm just looking. And then he says, drops the rope. He goes, hey, listen, I'm not on commission.
Oh.
So if you want help, I'm right over there. And I'm like, nice. Come here.
Don't go anywhere.
Come here. Yeah, I need help. But, you know, and whether he's on commission or not, he dropped the rope. He basically sent the message, this is going to be a collaborative process where I'm not going to push a TV on you and I'm here to help you. And now where I wouldn't recommend that is to leave. He left.
Yeah.
Whereas I think that's what we don't. We want to say, I'm going to drop the rope, but still ask my daughter if she wants to talk about who she's dating.
Yeah. That's powerful. I tell
you what, this is really hard is with, if you're married, is with your spouse. Really hard. Because, you know, it's really hard to drop the rope with people that are the source of your greatest need. Oh. You know, if your greatest need is to make money, it's hard to drop the rope. If your greatest need is to be loved by your children, it's hard to drop the rope. If your greatest need is security. Those are the areas where it's really hard. And I love my wife. So it's like hard for me to say, okay, if you don't want to eat healthy and you're sick and it doesn't do what you need best, I'm here to support you, you know, because you're like, oh, this is too important.
That's right.
But again, control is an illusion. We have no control.
Yeah. So how do you make that shift when your investment in it, when your stake is so high?
You know, I just ultimately look at it as the best thing I can do for my wife is to love her. And, you know, sometimes love is sharing the truth. But if I kind of think of it as there's a line in marriage and our relationships where we can just come to the line, but I can't go across the line and pull them to the line. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to come up to the line. I'm going to say, hey, listen, sweetie, I love you and you do whatever you want and I will support you. But I really believe you've heard from 10 people that, you know, and there's a lot to this conversation because my wife has, as you know, Bobby, has been chronically ill and she's heard from multiple people that she needs to change her diet, but she loves certain kinds of food.
Yeah.
And it's just so hard for her. And for many years, I pulled the rope and I'm like, you know, I kept pushing this agenda. And you could tell when she'd go into a cabin to get something, she'd say something or she'd look at me. And then one day I really did just drop the rope. I said, you do whatever you want. I love you and I accept you and I'm here for you. Would I like you to eat healthy? Yes. Do I think it's what you think? But you know what? I'm here to support you.
That's right.
I will walk through you. I will love you unconditionally. The greatest, and I guess this is sort of ultimately how I feel like works for me, is I know the greatest opportunity I have to have influence with my children, my customers, and my spouse is really just to speak the truth in love and drop the rope and validate their point of view and let it go.
Yeah.
And you know what? Here's another thing that I do. I think of all the times in my life where I don't listen. And I go, you know what? I am no different than any of the people I want to influence. Mm-mm. And whatever I'm seeing in them, I got it in me. And so it makes it easier for me to love people and accept them because I need just as much or more love and acceptance. Whatever my wife is not doing, I'm doing 10x.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, she's accepted and loves me. And I know if I'm fighting with her and I'm creating this tension and I'm pulling the rope and I'm doing all these things, all it does is just destroys my relationship.
Yeah.
You know,
and you're talking about love and acceptance. And there was you had a LinkedIn post. Oh, geez. A few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Maybe you and Claire.
Married.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you want to speak to, because I think that this is getting to, you know, into that to the law.
Well, you know, one of the things I talk about in the book, but the book is really about there's five barriers that we have to address to create receptivity. And the first barrier is their perception of you. And ultimately, you talk about endorphins. You know, there's people in our lives that release endorphins. When they walk in the room, you called it dopamine. There's a dopamine release because they walked into the room. And it's like people get high when you're around them. It's like, you know, and I'm like, well, what is that? Why do we show it? What makes us attractive, you know, to other people? And there's this, I think of it as a law, love, acceptance, and worth. People they know, and I think of love as being chosen. Like love is not just this feeling. Like when I love my children, I am choosing to make them a priority. I'm choosing them. And I think most parents choose their children, but the second one, they may not accept them. Mm. Like when my kids walk in the room, or my wife walks in the room, does she feel 100% completely accepted? Does she feel like she's got to work on her text when she texts me? Does she have to clean up her language when she's talking? Does she have to sound a certain way or do a certain thing to be, or does she, can she just be completely herself and knows that I completely accept her? So that's the A. And then the W is, do I value her? Do I value, God made her with a unique talent and skill set. And only she's the only person in the world that has that unique value. And do I value that? Is she worth? Do I see that? Do I make her feel that? And that doing that law makes people, you know, it meets their greatest need. And so when we do that, and that's what I wrote about, is that we just celebrated our 39th wedding anniversary. And I was like, that's one of my biggest regrets in our marriage is I didn't do that great of a job early in marriage.
Yeah.
You know, I wish I would have really understood that, because what happened when I finally got that idea of like, this is, she has this need to feel love and acceptance and worth. And like, as I saw our relationship blossom and change when I went from trying to fix her, you know, to love her. And a lot of it had to do with her health. It wasn't anything else. I mean,
yeah,
it wasn't like, oh, you need to do this better. But it was very hard for her because she was sick a lot. I'm like, if you'll do these things that they keep telling you to do, you'll be well. And so that became this thing. Of course, she That's had right. her things for me.
Right.
But she was much better at accepting me than I was accepting her. But that's what I was talking about, is that for all of us, what makes you attractive is not your talents, is not your looks, it is not your intellect, it is not what you accomplish, it's how you treat other people. And when they walk in the room, they either get a dopamine release and they go, oh my gosh, this person. And I've seen this with some of our clients. You know, we'll hang out with some of our clients. I'm thinking of one and I can't remember her name right now. I remember she worked at American Airlines. I can't remember her name. And she, when we traveled around and she walked in these facilities, I mean, everybody just lit up. I mean, she was just adored.
Yeah.
There was a couple of people like that. And I'm like, it's just how she made people feel. And if you want to create receptivity, love, accept, and demonstrate that you value people, that you think they're worthy or they're, you know, worth, and they'll listen to anything you have to say.
If they feel it.
And it's genuine. You can't fake that.
Cannot fake it. No, you can.
My wife knows what I value. My wife knows whether I accept her. My wife knows if I've chosen her. My behavior betrays me.
That's right. And I think this goes to what you were saying earlier too, right?
Yeah.
Our motive is ultimately transparent. You know? Okay. So there's one, I love that one. There's one other thing I wanted to ask you about, and it was another LinkedIn post about your daughter, Tyndall.
Yeah.
And when you guys took the trip down the river, because I think this is, it illustrates so many of these things.
Yeah, I was talking about how when we do have a receptive audience, one of the ways to get people to see a different point of view is to use word pictures. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I did a pretty good job talking to my kids. I think I did a better job talking to my kids because I didn't want anything from my children. I wanted something from my wife. So that was why it was a little more hard, more difficult for me to create receptivity with my wife, is because she was the source of my greatest need.
Yeah.
I wanted love from her and I didn't have any expectations. And that doesn't make me a better father. It's just true about me. We all have our thing. And that was just easy for me. But my daughter was rebelling pretty severely at the age of 15-ish. And because of that, she started drinking, hiding out high in alcohol. She wrote a book about it. So it's all public knowledge. And it's called Popular, by the way. Popular, Boys, Booze, and Jesus. So you got to check that. If you have a teenage daughter or about to be a teenager, check that one out. And she's a great writer. She's an amazing writer. But she was starting this process. You could tell she was starting to hang out with the wrong crowd. She was trying to hired alcohol. You could tell she was moving in a bad direction. And this was kind of where I said to her, you can date whoever you want, you know, and I can't stop you from drinking. I mean, if I feel like you're in danger, I'm going to make the moves I need to make, but I'm going to do everything. But this isn't about me. And so this was this word picture that came to me about how can I articulate to her, you know, how to understand my point of view. And I said, look, you're not a bad person. I'm no better than you. I said, all I'm trying to do is we just went down this river and we just gone to rafting. I said, and we stopped at a point because why did we stop at this certain point? And she said, well, because they knew there was this really dangerous rapid and they wanted to pull us aside, right? Because they, you know, wanted to protect us and make sure we avoided this rapid. I said, exactly. I said, so the reason I'm talking to you about some of these things is because I've already been down the river. And I said, it's these rapids that were, that I've been through these rapids, and some of the rapids I got in and they cost me. And all I'm doing is I'm trying to come up with the river, and I'm just trying to tell you where the rapids are. So you can listen to me, you cannot listen to me, but I know where the rapids are. And some of them I've been stuck in, or maybe I didn't get stuck in them, but my friends did. So your mom and I are going to share with you where the rapids are. And so why is it your best interest to fill in the blank? Not in our best interest. We're not trying to control you. We just want what's best for you. So that was just come to the conversation that she still brings up today.
Does she really?
Yeah. She still remembers that conversation, which is the power of word pictures.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, if you can come up with these, the way of articulating a metaphor that resonates to the audience you're talking about. This is, you know, part of being other-centered. It's not a metaphor that resonates with me. Yeah. It's a metaphor that resonates with her, because she was really scared of those rapids. I mean, you can tell she was really, she was like, because they talked about people dying.
Well, that would get your attention.
Yeah. It's like, well, what happens is they get stuck in this rock that's below the surface. They can't get out. And people, X number of people die every year. And so I related that to drinking. And so we had a conversation about that and some other things. So,
yeah. And see, this is what I love. Because yeah, these concepts, we know it works in sales. We've helped how many people?
Yeah. Hundreds of companies.
Hundreds.
Hundreds of thousands of people, probably.
Yeah. But what I love is how it relates to life.
Yeah.
As well.
Exactly.
So Tom, I'm so grateful that you came on. Tell us about the book, where people can find it, and also about Tyndall's book.
Oh yeah. So Tyndall's book, more importantly, is called Popular. Popular. Tyndall Baldwin is her maiden name. She married a wonderful guy named Ben Baldwin. And I don't know when that came out. That probably came out about, I don't know, 8 years ago, but it's actually been super successful. It's her first book. So yeah, if you're a parent and you want to kind of get a sort of what's going on and in the mind of a 15, 16 year old, it's a great book, or want to have great conversations with them, highly recommend that book. My book is called Unreceptive. And again, it's really designed to help you reach an audience that you're not reaching, either meetings you're not getting or customers you're not able to convert to your way of thinking or new products or solutions or anything you're selling. And again, it does apply to influence in general, either you're a leader or you just want to influence your friends or loved ones. And you can get it anywhere books are sold, Amazon. If you want to learn more about the book, there's also a book website, unreceptivebook.com. And there's more, there's some videos that kind of explain the book, or you can download an excerpt from the book. So that might be where you want to go to first.
Nice. And I know it's gotten a lot of good reviews on Amazon.
Yes. Thanks to you.
Oh, no.
I saw your review.
Did you really?
I appreciated that.
But it's not just, I'm not the only one that's given it a review.
No, you're not the only one, but I did notice your review and I really appreciated it.
Oh, you're very welcome. So if someone wants to learn more about Aslan or about you, what you're doing, what's the best way for them to get in touch?
Well, you can obviously go to Aslan Training, Aslan, A-S-L-A-N, training.com. That's our website. And they've got all the information about, you know, our solution if you're interested in sales training. Or if you just want to reach out to me personally, the best way is just on LinkedIn. You know, Tom Stanfill, S-T-A-N-F-I-L-L on LinkedIn. And you'll see me and we reach out, and I would love to hear from you or answer any questions that you have or direct you to if I can't help someone who can. So love to work with my friends in sales or leadership.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, Tom, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. I appreciate you sharing all your insights, and I hope it changes a lot of people in terms of their relationships, making them better.
Thank you, Bobby. Love being on your show and love you. So thank you.
Aw, thank you, Tom. I hope that you took away a lot from that interview with Tom. I personally love how these concepts are as applicable in our work lives as they are in our personal lives. Here are my three insights for thriving. Number one, you are never happier than your relationships. That makes me think about, what are we doing to nurture and grow those relationships that are most important to us? Are we on autopilot, or are we being intentional? Number two, influence is about an invitation. When someone leans in and asks us, "So what do you think?" that's when we've earned the right to be heard. And number three, my favorite principle is the polar principle. That people are unreceptive to an opposing point of view until they feel heard, understood, and validated. I think that intuitively, we all get that. But let me ask you this. When is the last time that you feel like you were truly heard, understood, and validated? And when is the last time that you gave that gift to someone else? It is such a powerful concept. And we've probably all heard it expressed in different ways, like, you know, you have to walk in someone else's shoes. But here's the thing. Yes, we have to walk in someone else's shoes, but did we remember to take our own shoes off first? Because if we didn't, we aren't taking the trip. We aren't walking in their shoes. If this is something that you want to work on, here's a shift that is really, really powerful. Release any judgment that you may have and shift to being curious, because you cannot feel both judgment and curiosity at the same time. And what's really important about that is if someone feels your judgment, they will shut down and receptivity is diminished even more. So those are my three insights. I hope that you enjoyed that conversation with Tom and that you can see ways to apply these concepts in your most important relationships. If you haven't done so already, please hit that subscribe button or follow button, depending on where you listen to podcasts. And as always, thank you so much for tuning in and for listening and for supporting the message of this podcast, that we can all thrive no matter what.